It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma coming at you as we do every week, and joining us at the top of this week's show is Mr. Ben Nicholson-Smith from MLBTradeRumors.com. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Thank you for being here. The 800-pound gorilla in every room around Orlando and the hotel that they're in down there for the winter meetings would be Mr. Cliff Lee. We've talked about this in podcasts past a couple of weeks about the free agent pitching situation after Lee not being very fruitful, unless you want Carl Pavano back in pinstripes. So what are you hearing, Ben, as to what the how many years the Yankees are going to offer him and where the negotiations are, if there are negotiations going on with Lee so far?
Well, the negotiations are definitely going on, and Lee's agent is talking to the Yankees and to the Rangers and to the Nationals and who knows who else, because there are a lot of teams out there that could use Cliff Lee in their rotation. But as far as where the Yankees will draw the line in the bidding for this guy, I mean, it sounds like they're not going to go 7 years on him, but 6 years is a real possibility. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Lee ends up signing a six-year deal worth maybe $140, $150 million.
Ben, do you think that Lee would take the longer contract with the Nats? He wants 7 years. Do you think he would go to the Nationals and bypass the Yankees if the Yankees take a hard line with those 6 years?
I mean, I think it will come down to total dollars being offered. I think that if the Nationals do offer something like $161 million over 7 years to match the Sabathia deal, and there's no certainty that that's actually going to happen, but if they do that and the Yankees come in with $145 over six, I think Lee would go with the bigger offer, even if it's slightly smaller per year. It's hard to turn down that extra $15, $16 million. So I think whoever offers the biggest contract at the end of the day will end up signing Cliff Lee.
It all comes down to the money, whether it's rainy or snowy or sunny. That was a very popular song when I was in high school about 20 years ago, and it still follows through today. We noticed on MLBTradeRumors.com that the Rangers are actually looking at Brandon Webb. Does that kind of tell you that maybe they're not getting the right kind of feeling with Lee in Texas?
I don't think so. I think that every team in baseball is looking at lots of different options at once, and it would be irresponsible for the Rangers to put everything and direct all of their energy toward Cliff Lee, because there is a very real chance that he signs with another team. So, like all 29 teams other than the Rangers, they're considering lots of options at once, trying to figure out ways of adding pitching in a market that, like you said, is pretty thin.
What do you think the Yankees' plan of attack would be if, and it's not even a big if, they can lose out on this Lee situation? If they did, what do you think their backup plan is?
I think they try really hard to convince Andy Pettitte to come out of retirement and to keep playing. And that's probably something that they'll do regardless of where Lee signs. But Andy Pettitte would become a much bigger factor for the Yankees if they lose out on Cliff Lee. I don't think they would go to Carl Pavano, but I think they would call the Royals about Zach Greinke. And for all the questions that there are about his willingness to pitch in New York, his ability to handle the pressure, he would be one of the best pitchers available as soon as Cliff Lee signs. So I think that's something that they would have to consider.
You can't talk about the Yankees without bringing up the Red Sox, and they just made a heck of a big deal with Adrian Gonzalez in that trade with San Diego. Harold Reynolds on MLB Network thought that the Padres didn't get enough back for this guy. I happen to agree with him, but the Red Sox definitely exponentially made that lineup a heck of a lot better, didn't they?
They definitely did, and you have to think that that's going to be a fearsome lineup from day one next year. It'll be a little left-handed heavy, but you know, that's something that they've overcome before, and I think that Gonzalez is a great addition to that lineup. And in fact, I'm really curious to see what kind of numbers he's going to have coming from Petco Park and moving to Fenway. I mean, you look at what Adrian Beltre did last year, moving from a similarly big ballpark and then going on to lead the league in doubles. I think that Adrian Gonzalez could just put up some massive numbers there.
Hey, Ben, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hey, doing well, Joe. How's it going?
Good, good. I actually want to ask you, staying with the Red Sox, Adrian Gonzalez is now their first baseman. Kevin Youkilis now is their everyday third baseman. And now that's one less team on the market that is in the market for Adrian Beltre. So now with Beltre's options kind of being limited here, the A's are out. You know, I'm hearing that, you know, the Red Sox are now out now. So where does Adrian Beltre end up, and what kind of demands is there out there for this guy?
There's definitely demand for him. He had a great season. He's a good all-around player, and there aren't that many third basemen out there who are even close to what Beltre can bring.
Right.
But he's looking for a five-year deal. That's going to cost a lot of money, probably $70 million, $80 million. So, like you said, there aren't that many suitors out there who can afford that asking price. I think that the Angels are the one natural landing spot when you look at how much Brandon Wood has faltered and their hole at third base and the fact that they have a lot of money to spend. I think that that's a definite possibility for Beltre. And if the Red Sox and A's are out, there's at least one landing spot for him.
Now, you mentioned that the Angels have a lot of money, and Artie Moreno loves his outfielders. We saw what he did with Torii Hunter a couple of years ago. Everybody's been saying that that's the natural spot for Carl Crawford to end up, but now with Jason Wirth not going to the Red Sox and ending up with the Nationals with that 7-year, $126 million contract that he scored, where does that put Carl Crawford in the mix to go to, you know, either Boston now or the Angels? And, you know, now what's his leverage with that, with the Wirth signing? Is he going to make a lot more than Wirth? What's going to be his asking price?
I think his leverage went up a lot because you look at that contract that Wirth signed, and I don't think you're going to find a lot of people who say that Wirth is a better player than Carl Crawford. Wirth's inarguably an older player than Carl Crawford, and he's not as good of a defender, and he doesn't have the same all-round offensive game that Crawford does. So I think that if you're representing Carl Crawford at this point, you're asking for maybe $160 million over 8 years. You're certainly asking for a 7-year deal to match the one that Wirth got. So it's going to take a massive commitment to get Carl Crawford to sign.
And Artie Moreno over the years has kind of drawn that hard line and said, you know, we're not going to go 8 years or 10 years on a lot of these players. Can you see Artie Moreno, you know, saying, well, Carl Crawford's a special player and we don't want to lose out on him. We're going to go the 8 years for him.
I can see that happening. I mean, you look at the Angels' spending history and they've never signed a player to a $100 million deal. Torii Hunter's deal was the biggest one in franchise history, but I think that Artie Moreno is really unhappy with the way the 2010 season went, and he has said publicly that he's going to spend. He's ready to spend, and the Angels have a lot of needs, and a lot of their needs can be addressed by players who are on the free agent market now, like Crawford, Beltre, Rafael Soriano, maybe even Cliff Lee. So the Angels figure to be bidders on some of the biggest free agents remaining.
Now, looking at some corner infielders, I want to talk about Mark Reynolds being traded to the Baltimore Orioles. Horrible batting average last year under the Mendoza line. 32 home runs. He moves to a hitter-friendly ballpark, still strikes out a lot. Hitter-friendly ballpark in Camden Yards. I mean, this guy has a potential to hit 40 to 50 home runs in that ballpark, and he is a good, solid third baseman. What do you think about this move for the Orioles?
You know, it's a solid move for the Orioles. I mean, David Hernandez is a guy who was pretty highly thought of around the league, big strikeout potential, but they end up getting a third baseman who could be an impact bat in the middle of their order for the next three seasons. So the asking price from the Diamondbacks wasn't insurmountable at all. They ended up giving up a couple decent relievers, but that's about it. And like you say, I mean, Mark Reynolds could hit 40-plus home runs in Camden Yards, but don't forget he's coming from a homer-friendly park as well because Chase Field lets the ball fly right out of there, and he ended up with 32 last year. But this is a guy with mammoth power, so I would not be shocked to see him among the leaders for the American League home run title.
The other corner infielder that I was going to talk about really impacting the American League East is Carlos Pena, another guy a lot of power. His batting average was below the Mendoza line last year. However, this is a guy that could really be an asset to a team out there that really wants his services. And you know what? He's a heck of a first baseman defensively. So what can you see? You know, what teams are out there that are in the bidding for Carlos Peña? And do you think he might end up back with the Rays?
I don't see him returning to the Rays because he will be in position to command probably close to $10 million on a one-year deal. And who knows, in this market, he could end up with a multi-year deal. But there are a lot of teams out there, like the Orioles, the Blue Jays, the Padres and Diamondbacks are looking for first basemen. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Mariners interested. The A's are interested. So there's no shortage of interest in this guy. And it's for the same reason the Orioles wanted Mark Reynolds. He's a pretty solid defender, and he can hit the ball out of the yard 30, 40 times a year, mm-hmm. even though his batting average is going to be low.
All right, one more question for me before I send it back to Chris over here. But I want to talk to you real quick just about what's going on in the winter meetings. I know you guys at MLBTradeRumor.com, you guys have just your pulse on the entire winter meetings right now down in Orlando. What are you seeing? What's interesting out there? Any trades that we're not hearing about? Just pump up the site and let us know what's going on with baseball.
Well, you know, like you said, there's tons going on, and every one of the 30 teams is actively talking about potential deals, which is why it's so exciting. I mean, as far as potential surprises or under-the-radar moves, you look at the Rays and how many needs they have this offseason with their bullpen completely in flux and the need for some power now that Peña and Crawford are going to be leaving free agents. So I think that the Rays are a team that could surprise some people, make a trade, maybe trade a middle infielder like a Jason Bartlett, maybe trade a starting pitcher like a Matt Garza or even a James Shields. So I wouldn't be stunned to see the Rays make a move the next couple of days.
One more for me, and I'm going to bring it back to Cliff Lee, where we started this conversation, Ben. And would you be shocked if the Yankees did not win the Cliff Lee sweepstakes?
I would be, because the Yankees need him really badly. And I find it hard to imagine a Yankee rotation without Pettitte and Cliff Lee. It would start to look really thin, even though they would have Hughes and Sabathia and A.J. Burnett for what he's worth. So I really think that the Yankees need to get Lee. They're aware of this better than anybody, and they know that they have a deeper pocketbook than anybody else. So they can go out there and write a check for $170 million, as painful as that might be to do. So I think that Lee is going to be in pinstripes next year.
All right, that is Ben Nicholson-Smith of MLBTradeRumors.com. Ben, listen, we really, really appreciate you taking the time out to do this today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma. We'd like to thank once again Ben Nicholson-Smith from MLBTradeRumors.com for joining us for our baseball segment. Now it's time to wrap ourselves up in a little...
We're going to talk about the foosball.
Yes, we are, Joey. We're going to start with the New York Jets, who they have to come up with a new word for embarrassment last night, because that was just...
They got rexed.
There you go. There's the word. Joey came up with it right there. Very good off the top of his head. Patted down, if you will. We're going with the...
They went with a TSA scan.
Yes.
They had a full body search on that one.
Yes, they did. They bypassed the scanner.
Somebody put on a glove.
And got patted down. Oh, say something funny.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, listen. If you're going to talk as much as Rex Ryan talks, if you're going to write those checks off the field, you better damn well cash them when it comes time to play. And I was talking to Jet fans here at Yes about the impact that I thought Danny Woodhead would have in the game. And they kind of poo-pooed me and said, he'll probably have 39 yards rushing. He won't be a factor.
I guess
that kid was a factor.
You know, and it's funny, too, because Bill Belichick, you know, first of all, the kid was going to be motivated. Mm-hmm. And he's played some good games up until now. Him and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis are a nice little 1-2 punch in that backfield for that Patriots team right now. But not only was he going to be motivated, but Belichick was going to be motivated to play him as much as humanly possible and key him in on certain packages to shove it down the Jets' throat.
Absolutely. And we saw on Twitter, Brady was on WEEI on Monday, or Tuesday rather, after the game and said, Belichick in the fourth quarter said, we're playing 60 minutes. I don't give a bleep what the score is.
No, it's... And you knew Belichick. You saw it last night. They were throwing on when they were up 31-3, still going for fourth down.
Hey, all you hear about is this vaunted New York Jets defense.
That's the thing.
You know what?
If the defense is that good, you got to stop
them. Stop us.
You got to stop them.
You have the best defense in this conference, in the league. You stop us.
I'll tell you what, that was a statement game for me because earlier in the year, you know, the Patriots, they weren't nearly the team they are right now.
No.
And this is a team, their defense might be ranked in the lower portions or last in certain categories in this league. But at the end of the day, Bill Belichick gets his guys up for big games. And let me tell you, he outcoached Rex Ryan, who had a terrible night coaching with challenges and calls and field goal attempts. And just everything that he did, it wasn't a good decision on Rex Ryan's part. And Tom Brady put on a clinic and showed everyone why he is the best quarterback in the league.
And let's take a look at the Jets' last four games before this Patriot game, Joe. And that's the fact that we said this too on the podcast. We're not breaking any news here. The Jets beat the Lions by three. The Jets beat the Browns by six. The Jets beat the Texans by three. What did we say?
Don't forget that Bronco game.
And the Broncos too on that pass interference, which was a pass interference, but still they had to go almost to the end of the game to beat the Denver Broncos, who just fired their head coach Josh McDaniels because since starting 6-0 last season, he's 5-17.
Right, it's just a bad situation.
We said, and we're not the only ones who said it, but it makes sense to trumpet it once again. If the Jets had that kind of effort against a team like the Patriots, it wasn't going to be enough. And they said, Bart Scott said after the game, look, we didn't go out with energy. How do you not go out with energy in New England?
In New England, in one of the most hyped up games in the last 10 years. Truly.
They billed that as the best game of the year. Of the year.
I was following Pat
Hanlon. And what
happened?
Monday Night Football?
Yeah.
Got another clunker.
I was following Pat Hanlon on Twitter last night. And as the Jets were getting steamrolled, Pat Hanlon goes, he's the VP of communications for the New York Giants, by the way. He said, yeah, this is the best game in the last 25 years. I believe the hype. And it was already 24-3 at that point. So he was taking his shots, too. But, Chris, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, you look at the Jets against the Packers. They scored no points. You look at the Jets against the Ravens. They scored 9 points. You look at the Jets against the Patriots in this game. They scored 3 points. In their three losses, they have combined... It's not just their defense. It's their offense.
Yeah.
They've combined to score 12 points in their three losses.
That's unbelievable.
12 points.
Unbelievable.
All right. So they're not getting a consistent play on either side of the ball when they have to play a good team.
So let's break it down now, Joe. Let's go through the divisions.
Right.
And we'll start, since we brought up the Jets and Pats, let's start with the AFC East. The Jets' remaining schedule as we are entering week 14 of this NFL. It's unbelievable how it's already December and it's week 14.
Flown by.
But the Dolphins are in town this Sunday. You could poo-poo the Dolphins if you want.
They're a weird team.
I'm not poo-pooing the Dolphins at all. I don't care they're coming into the new Meadowlands Stadium. An in-division game, you can't poo-poo.
And you don't know what Dolphins team is going to show up.
Right.
You don't know what Chad Henne's going to show up.
Right. So you got the Dolphins this week. Then the next 2 weeks are dicey for Jets fans. Okay, this could go from bad to worse very fast. Because you're talking about if you lose to Miami, if the Dolphins figure out a way to beat you, you go to Pittsburgh, who is still fighting tenaciously for the AFC North, which we'll get to in a second. And then you go to Chicago to Soldier Field on December 26th, the day after Christmas, where the Bears will still be fighting for their division life, and maybe even a playoff spot. We'll get into the NFC in a second. That's a dicey game because that's a must-win for the Bears.
Right.
Then you wrap up the season with the Bills at home. You could look at that as we'll take care of the Bills game. But still, that's an in-division game, and the Bills would love nothing more than to play spoiler for a Jets postseason bid or a seed.
I'll say this, though. The Jets have put themselves in a position where they are they're 9-3 now. And look, if they split those games, it's a position where those games, if they go 2-2, which can easily happen mm-hmm. with a team like the Jets, it's 9-3, then they're 11-5 and they secure a playoff spot. That's the position they've put themselves in at this point. And, you know, I personally think that they're going to win two of those games and they're going to make the playoffs. It's just a matter of when they get to these playoffs, having to play a higher caliber team like the Patriots, like the Steelers, like the Ravens, can they do it? To me, right now, after that game, the Jets are the fourth best team in the AFC. I'm not talking about them being the best team in the conference anymore. I'm talking about Patriots being ahead of them and the Steelers and the Ravens being ahead of them.
All right. Well, let's take a look now at the Patriots schedule. They got the Bears this week at Soldier Field.
Tough game.
They got the Packers in New England at Foxborough week 15. Week 16, they're in Buffalo. And week 17, they're home against Miami. So they got two home, two on the road, two tough ones in the next 2 weeks. The Patriots' medal is going to be tested as well in Chicago and at home against the Packers.
The division is still very up for grabs.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Both teams do not have easy roads the rest of the way. All right, the AFC North now. We start with the Steelers, who just beat the Ravens on Sunday night 13-10. And here's who the Steel City has to deal with the rest of the way. They have the Bengals this week. They have the Jets. And then to end the season, they have the Panthers, who now sit at 1-11. That's in Pittsburgh. And then they go to Cleveland to take on the Browns, who are 5-7
right
now.
They have that's a pretty good pad for them. I mean, that's a nice little schedule for them.
Now let's see what the Ravens have to deal with. They take on the Texans in Houston, and believe it or not, the Houston Texans at 5-7 still have a chance to win the AFC South. We'll get into that in a second. Then they have the Saints.
Tough game.
It's at home. It's in Baltimore.
That's a tough game.
That gives them a little bit of an edge. Then they wrap up the season with two patty cakes, if you ask me. The Browns in Cleveland and the Bengals at home, where Maryland knows crab cakes and football.
You know, it's funny because, to me, that sounds like the Steelers and the Ravens could win three of their last four games. Both of them, which would put Pittsburgh ahead of them.
All right, now we go to the AFC South, Joey, where the Jacksonville Jaguars are leading the way now at 7-5. They have Oakland at the Colts, at home for Washington, and then probably a game that could mean the division at Houston, but it depends on what shakes out.
To me, that at Indianapolis game is going to tell the whole story. That's going to be for the division.
All right, well, let's take the Colts right now. They have Tennessee, who's just...
On a Thursday night. So it's Thursday night this week, and they're going to get a lot of rest before that Jacksonville showdown.
Yeah.
So that actually could work to their advantage.
Tennessee this Thursday, Jacksonville, Oakland, and Tennessee again. And Tennessee is just playing putrid football. Chris Johnson, if you own him in fantasy like yours truly does, you are just struggling right now because they have nothing at the quarterback position. Randy Moss, pretty much, I saw on Twitter, somebody said, I think Randy Moss retired. Year. Just,
you know, that schedule to me says, if the Colts, who are really struggling at this point, if the Colts wanted a boost, that's the way to boost the Indianapolis Colts and get them hot before the postseason.
All right, let's see who the Houston Texans have in the last 4 weeks of the season, see what their schedule looks like. The Ravens this week, the Titans the following week, the Broncos, and the Jagguars.
I think it's a two-horse race. I think it's going to be Colts, Jaguars, and I think the Colts are going to wind up taking it.
All right, let's go ahead and then to the AFC West now. We'll start with the Chiefs, who are leading the AFC West right now. They are 8-4, two games better than the Raiders and the Chargers, and the Raiders beat the Chargers this weekend.
And not only that, but it not only was it an important win because it leveled them out at 6-6 and tied them with the Chargers, but it's like they now have that extra win over the Chargers because guess what? They swept the season series. That was a huge win for the Oakland Raiders.
Absolutely, and we'll get to them in just a second. First, we start with the Chiefs, and they play the Chargers in San Diego this weekend. That should be a dandy. Then they go to St. Louis and wrap up the season at home. They play the Titans in Week 16 and the Raiders in Week 17. So
this
division
to me,
is not over by any way.
But I'll tell you what, the Chargers-Raiders game meant so much because now they have a two-game pad on the Chargers. If the Chargers won that game and they kept winning, you know, this game this weekend would have meant a lot more.
Well,
but
I
really feel like the Chiefs control their own destiny.
Yes, indeed they do. If they lose, though, to the Chargers this Sunday and the Chiefs fall to 8-5 and the Chargers move up to 7-6, these are their last three games. The 49ers at home, the Bengals on the road, and the Broncos on the road.
Wow.
So they could end up with 10 wins.
If
they beat the Chiefs this week, they could end up 10-6.
Yes.
Moving on.
Now the question is at 8-5, just going back to the Chiefs real quick. At 8-5, those last three games, can the Chiefs get to 10 wins?
The Rams, who will be fighting for the NFC West, the Titans, who are basically done, and the Raiders. That's going to be tough. That's going to be tougher for the Chiefs. They have a tougher road than the Chargers on paper. How about the Raiders?
The Raiders got to hope that those teams beat each other up here because, look, let's check
Jaguars,
this out.
Jaguars.
Yep.
Broncos at Jaguars. Broncos at home, Colts at home, at Chiefs. So they're at Arrowhead in the last week of the season.
It's a nice story with the Raiders, a story franchise coming back, but I just see that ending up at 8-8.
NFC North now. Let's transfer over to the National Football Conference, and we start with the North. Chicago Bears leading the way. Kings of the Midway, monsters of the Midway, as it were, at 9-3. The Packers are 8-4. Vikings 5-7, and the Lions at 2-10. They could be
A hard 2-10.
Yeah,
though.
They could be 6-6.
Oh, it's really a shame. I feel bad for them because they're in a lot of these games, and Stafford he just keeps getting hurt. I feel bad for the Lions. I really do.
Okay, so the Bears have the Pats this weekend at home. Then they go to Minnesota. Bring in the Jets, and then they're at Green Bay. That is a tough schedule
for
the Bears. That is a tough schedule for the Bears. How about the Packers? Packers are in Detroit this weekend, which is not a pushover.
No.
It's the Lions keep fighting. From week to week, they keep fighting.
But I'll tell you this, though. They keep fighting, but it has to be in the back of their head that they've lost 25 in a row within the division.
Yeah.
25 in a row. Within their division.
Well, they look to end that this week when they take on the Packers in Detroit at Ford Field. Then the following week, they're in New England, the Packers are. And then they bring the Giants to Lambeau and finish with the Bears. So we're going to have some drama, as it were, as
that
the season
NFC North
winds down.
That NFC North is going to be
and
tough.
And the NFC as a whole.
Let me tell you, that division, though, whoever wins that division with those four games, they're going to earn it. They
absolutely.
Earn that division.
Absolutely. Like E.F. No. Was it E.F. Hutton?
E.F. Hutton.
No, E.F. Hutton. He talked, you listened.
Yeah.
But I remember the guy from the Showtime show. I forget the name of the show off the top of my head.
Super Dave?
John Houseman.
No. Oh, no.
You earn it. Anyway, I'm dating myself. Here we go. NFC South. Start with the Falcons. This is basically a three-horse race, as
really
Joe
is.
Mentioned before we started taping this. It's between the Falcons, the Saints, and obviously the Buccaneers. Falcons, their last four games pretty much wrap up the division. It's the Panthers in Carolina, the Seahawks in Seattle, the Saints at home, and the Panthers at home. So they, out of their last four games, they have the Panthers twice.
Yeah, I mean, they should wrap this thing up.
They should wrap up the division here. The Saints have the Rams, who, as we said, are battling for that NFC West crown. Then they go to Baltimore, to Atlanta, and they finish against the Bucs. So they're going to earn it, too. The Saints, in no way, shape, or form, have anything wrapped up.
No.
The Buccaneers have the Redskins this weekend.
Win.
Then they bring Detroit to Tampa.
Okay.
They bring Seattle to Tampa.
Wow.
Then they finish at the Saints.
I'll put it to you this way. Those are three of four winnable games for the Bucs. And what really angers me is that one of those teams, they all could make the playoffs. However, I still think that the Giants and Eagles are going to want, both of them are going to be in the postseason.
Absolutely.
So one of those teams, one of those worthy teams, is going to miss out on the playoffs, and one of the crap teams from the NFC West is going to be in the playoffs.
We'll get there. Don't rush the
bit. I know. I'm sorry. But
but you did.
Angers me.
It's like we had a meeting because you knew exactly where we were going. You said Giants-Eagles. We're in the NFC East, Joe.
Right.
We'll start with the hometown Giants. I know they're not technically in first place, but deal with it. You're dealing with two Giant fans here.
Exactly.
So we start with the Giants. They're at Minnesota, obviously, this weekend.
Yep.
Then they bring in the Eagles to the new Meadowlands Stadium, which is a must-win situation. I overheard Howard Cross after he taped This Week in Football. He thinks the Giants might lose in Minnesota this weekend, which would make the next week against the Eagles even
more
of a must-win.
Yeah.
Then they go to Lambeau Field and wrap up the season in Washington, D.C., against the Redskins, where just, that team is just a
to me,
joke.
That schedule screams at this point. What was it again? It was
Minnesota, Philly, Green Bay, Washington.
I think they're going to win two of those games at least. I really do.
They'll have 10 wins.
I think the three of those four games are winnable if they can beat Philadelphia.
You want the good news for Giant fans, Joe?
Yes.
The Eagles have to play the Cowboys, who are on fire right now. Twice. Not once, but twice in the last four games.
And the last game of the season.
Last game of the season will be in Philly, which will be a game to basically decide. And that game might get flexed. I don't know what you think. But the first one is a Sunday night game at 8:20.
Right.
I don't know what they have scheduled for the Sunday night game in Week 17. That's pretty much where I'm
well,
going
that,
right
that,
now.
Well, the Week 17, according to the NBC contract, is the one flex where they don't need to give 10 days notice. They can give a week's notice, and they have their choice of any game. So no game is protected by any of the networks.
Yeah,
so Fox,
there is no 8:20 game scheduled
right,
that day.
Right, because
so it could be any of those.
Right,
games.
It could be any of those games. So
that's why he's on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, because he is a walking encyclopedia, Mr.
Oh,
Joe
you.
Orihammer. All right, so there's the Eagles. Cowboys, Giants, both road games the next 2 weeks. Then Minnesota and the Cowboys at the link.
There
so
you go.
The Giants still have a shot to win this division. And
Giants need to stop Adrian Peterson.
And unfortunately, I will be outside the new Meadowlands Stadium wearing nothing but a T-shirt and shorts.
That is true, everybody.
I open my big mouth.
Get out there, mid-January.
Nobody will be there. It'll be me and you, and I'll be freezing my tuchus off while
doing a podcast.
While you're sitting there, you know, with the hand warmers and the seven layers.
Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to tailgate out there, too. Anybody wants some burgers and dogs and steaks?
We got to get permission from the Giants, by the way.
It's on Chris Sheeran.
From the new Meadowlands Stadium, by the way.
Yes.
All right, let's wrap it up with the NFC West here. The Rams, the Seahawks, and I've included the 49ers as well. I think we could finally say farewell, adieu, alvitazain, arrivederci to the defending NFC West champion, Arizona Cardinals. I think they're history.
Yeah, they're done.
The Rams have the Saints in New Orleans, the Chiefs at home, the Niners at home, the Seahawks at home. So
that last game might decide who's the worst team
to get into the playoffs. The Seahawks have the Niners in San Francisco this weekend. They host Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're at Tampa Bay.
Mm.
And then the Rams. So the Seahawks are going to earn it if they get there.
I'm liking St. Louis. Liking their chances.
The Niners, who are right now in the standings at 4-8 and still with a shot to win the division, which is just asinine. They have the Seahawks this week at home. Then they go at the Chargers, at the Rams, and they finish the season against the Cardinals. You know what? St. Louis Rams are winning the NFC West. Sam Bradford, in his first year at quarterback, is going to be in the playoffs as a division winner hosting a playoff game.
And you know what? One other guy that everybody remembers from New York, we're going to be congratulating Steve Spagnuolo.
Absolutely.
For doing a great job in taking that organization, which was absolute crap for the last you know, several years after being the greatest show on turf early in 2000s. And you know what? Making them a contender again. I give them a lot of credit. A lot of credit.
There's an old saying or old
adage.
Something. If you cut off the head, everything else dies around it.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams didn't have that head the past couple of years. Sam Bradford has now completed the Voltron robot. Feet and legs, form arms and body, and I'll form the head.
I'm just picturing this Voltron body that you've created here. Yeah, it's good stuff, Chris. Good stuff. I like it. And you know what?
I think that's a good note to end on, don't you?
Hey, you know what they say, Milo? If it's too loud, you're too old.
God. Just, you know, if you made it this long through the podcast, God bless you. Holy crap. Oh, God. For Joe Oriema, I'm Chris Shear. We hope you enjoyed it. We're going to have another podcast later this week with Jack Curry. And
it's a double podcast.
Yeah, and Bald Vinny. We'll be talking to both of them on Friday, so look for that. But we wanted to get you an early week edition since both of us were a little bit under the weather last week. We didn't get a chance to tape, so you get two for the price of one this week. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we'll see you later in the week this weekend when we preview the NFL and take a look at the baseball winter meetings down in Orlando. For Joe Oriema, I'm Chris Shearn. We'll see you next time here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com.